All right, once again, my name is Matt Holbein. I'm an alcoholic. We're going to get this meeting started. I have asked three people to do some readings for us. I've asked Walter to read the preamble, Ken to read how it works, and Cheryl to read the traditions in that order.
My name is Walter. I'm an alcoholic, a member of the Hamilton Group in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. First of all, I'd just like to thank the committee for putting this on and all the volunteers, because it's a lot of work putting this on. So, thanks again. Alcoholics Anonymous Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. And I'd just like to thank Matt for asking me to do this. Thank you.
All right, now what we're here for. It was the craziest thing. I was at this garage sale, and I found this CD in the free bin, and I gave it a listen, and it just happened to be Martin. No, I met Martin for the first time this weekend. Harmon gave me a CD and told me I should listen to it. And when I listened to it, I thought he would be the perfect speaker for us here at Founders Day. And let me tell you, it's been fun to meet Martin, and it's been fun to meet the gentleman he brought with him. It's amazing how that all works out when you're asking people that you've never met before in your life to come and speak at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and how they just tend to meet right with you, fit right with you. So without any more from me, I'm going to give you Martin.
Good morning. I too am an alcoholic. I belong to the Hamilton Group. My name's Martin. Now, just in case you think there's something wrong with the sound system, I actually talk like this. I'm going to try to talk slow, but I'm sure when I get excited, that'll be over. Remember, I love you. I'd like to get the formalities out of the way first. I would like to thank Matt for inviting me. And, he's been such a great guy. And he phoned me all the time, and we just changed our number, and that stopped, but it was okay. And then he gave me Mr. and Mrs. Dick down here as our hosts. My God. Good people. Thanks so very much. Thank you. I'm actually an alcoholic, and I need to tell you my drug story first. I've never done any. I've never even smoked a cigarette. That's the truth. I boxed at a pretty high level, and if you had smoked, someone would have really hurt you. So I never done any of that. But I like to drink. But I'll tell you why I drank, I think. I was 11 years old on a Saturday evening, and I was coming back from watching a soccer club that means so much to me. And I was with a guy called Joe. And I can remember seeing the car coming, and I can't get to Joe. And the car hits him at 60 miles an hour. Blood all over me. It was terrible. You know, it was a traumatic event. And I think I would have got over that if that's all that had happened. Joseph got buried on the Thursday, and on the Friday, his father, who suffered from this illness we have, went out and got drunk at God for taking his boy. And I understand that, because I've been drunk at God a few times myself. But he came up the street, and we lived in the north side of Glasgow, which is a pretty rough place, a place called Springburn. And I'm sitting outside the tenement where I lived, and I'm in shock, is really what it is. And his father came up, and God, he was drunk. And he said to me, it should have been you. I have a secretive type of nature. Like, I just never tell on anybody. That's just my nature. And if I had went and told people in my family what that man said to me, there would have been trouble. Because we weren't a dysfunctional family. We weren't. We were mental, which is different. We're not the family that put the word fun in dysfunctional. We're the family that put the word fun in funeral. And I'm not joking. So I never said anything. But from that day, I needed relief. I carried this thing that was too heavy for a wee boy to carry. And that really is the truth. And I don't drink until I'm 13. So for 20 months, I carry this guilt. And I'm one of those people who changes guilt into shame. Because now I really think it's my fault. And when I'm 13 on my birthday, I have a drink. Now, I know there's people who don't like the taste of booze, but I like it all. My favorite drink is what you got the most of, and can I have another? From 13. And God, I felt so good. It was the first time I had any relief. And 13, I start drinking when I get a chance. And at 15, I'm brought up in a house with these two maniacs. No, parents. Nice little people. My dad's 5 feet five, weighs 124 pounds, and he's a monster. And he's got that little man syndrome. And my mother's 5 feet, and she's off the Black Irish, and she is genuinely, genuinely the best person I ever met in my whole life. And I used to come into the house at 15, and I would hear clink, 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 clink. And do you know that what it was? That was my mother putting the rosary back in the dish beside her bed, because she used to lie and say rosaries for me. All the time. At 17, I don't know what you're like at 17, but at 17 I'm chaos, I'm full of hormones, you know, and I don't come in. My brother Harry, God, I love that guy, my dad would say to him, you be in here at 10 o'clock, and at 5 to 10 he would turn up. My dad would say to me, you be in at 10 o'clock, and he'd have to say, what day, AM or PM, and do collect calls count? So I'd just leave. 17, I come into the house one day, and little Jimmy says, come here, you. And this is to start a whole series of come here, yous. He said, you're moving. I said, what? And he went in his pocket, and he took out a key with an address on it, and I moved. Now, I live in a slum. And he got me an apartment. He got me square footage in the slum I lived in, and nobody in the slum would live there. You've never seen anything like it in your life. There was a guy who lived there before, had been lifting the floorboards to burn them in the fire. You had to be a gymnast to get to bed. But because I'm entrepreneurial like a lot of alcoholics, and I was, where I worked, I was in the lost and found department. Like, I found it just before you lost it. I started to do that place up, and I had Axminster carpets and Norwegian wood in the wall. It was fabulous. Short order. It was wonderful. But I don't know how you drink. This is how I drink. I get my pay on a Thursday night, and I drink the lot. I just like to drink. And by Sunday morning, I'm broker than the Ten Commandments. Every Sunday, not some Sundays, every Sunday. And I don't even check now to see if I've got any money because I know I'm broke. So I would go over to the window and I'd look down at my mum's house and I would wait and I would wait till my dad left. And as soon as he left, I'd get my laundry down to my mum. And my mum would wash it, she'd iron it, she'd make me sandwiches up for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday, or I would never have went to work. That went on for 2 years till I almost finished my apprenticeship. And I get into my mum's one Sunday morning and I know he's there. He's this size. I used to tell people I was terrified of him because I couldn't articulate that I loved him and respected him. I just couldn't do that. So I turn around and there he's there. Come here, you. I says, what? He says, you're moving. I says, I moved 2 years ago. He says, no, you're moving countries. You sure? He went in his pocket and he took out two photographs of my mother. I'll tell you one of the things I have problems with now. I have a lot of problems with things in Alcoholics Anonymous now, but one of the things I've always had a problem with is when people say, well, if you don't love yourself, you can't love anybody. I believe they're two mutually exclusive things, and I always love Mama, and I always love my dad. And he showed me two photographs of my wee ma. Mama's off the Black Irish. She's got short black hair and blue eyes. She's really good looking. I look like my dad. Or I would have probably died. And he shows me a photograph of her when she's 46. That's when I'm 13. And she looks like she's 30 years old. And then he takes another photograph out behind it, and I've been drinking for 6 years. And in that 6 years, I've painted 30 years onto my mother's face. And my father said, you done that. And I knew he was right. I says, where do you want me to go? He'd been in the British Navy for 30 years. He didn't care. Go. And I went to Canada. I tried to get to America, but seemingly it's very difficult to get in here. Although I worked a lot here. So I go to Canada and I got a big sister. I'm the youngest of all these kids and I got a sister who's 15 years older than me. And Margaret's really rich. What she is really hardworking and diligent. And do you know she worked in a company that worked 5 days a week, every single week? New experience to me. And she had this big house and my brother-in-law took me into the basement. And you know, in my mind's eye, the rec room he had was the size of this hall. I had never been in a basement of a house like that before. And he turned the lights on and at the end of the basement there was a bar. I don't mean two bottles of whiskey and five cans of lager. That would have been breakfast for me and Matt. I mean, he had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of 40 and 60 ounces. They'd went on holidays and they'd brung drink home. Can you imagine that? I used to drink it on the plane because it always got cut off. And he put his arms around me, big, tall, good-looking guy, my brother-in-law, Walter. And he said this to me, and as soon as he said this to me, I know they haven't told him about me. I know they have. He said, help yourself. Do you know what the feeling was like? And I don't mean to be rude. I really don't. But do you know the first time you have sex? Well, with somebody else. That's what it was like when he said, help yourself. I couldn't believe it. I'm a stonemason in trade, so I got a great job here. I was making more money in 2 days than some guys were bringing families up with, and I was drunk all the time. And I would come home and I'd go straight into the basement. And my sister would say, do you want dinner? I'd say, no. I got something off the truck. What I got off the truck was a ham sandwich and four cans of beer to get me through the day, and then I'd go down and drink my brother-in-law's booze. And I came in one night and my brother went to me and says, come here, you. I said, moving. It's the story of my life. I'm starting to think that nobody wants me. You know, in retrospect, when I look back on that, they were warning signs of what the alcoholism that was to come was going to cost me. And the truth is, I couldn't see them because I now suffer from alcoholism. And it makes me blind to that kind of stuff. The only stuff I'm really interested in is getting drunk because I need relief. I came to my first AA meeting when I was 20. That's a kid. And I came to AA for relief. And I didn't like it. And I'll tell you why I didn't like it. I could smell the sobriety as I walked in. You know how when you walk into a bar, like those little juke joints, they got a certain smell to them? No, that wasn't an AA. The guy says to me, they're all alcoholics, go. I say, they're not alcoholics. None of them are drinking. It's two kinds of alcoholics. And I came back at 21. And I came back at 21 to impress a girl, you know, because that's what we do, right? Because you see, I had moved to this big town called Hamilton, which is a steel town in Canada, and you got to find a local, and I found a bar called the Jockey Club. I'm sure they've got 100 of them in Akron. And so what happens is that on a Friday night, the Jockey Club is a bucket of blood. You can fight and fornicate and do all that stuff, and it's okay. But on a Saturday night, shirt and a tie, wall to wall to wall women. I like women, you know. I like them all, actually. I especially like the ones who'll talk to me. And I can remember going in there, have you ever been so drunk you think nobody thinks you're drunk? I was like that all the time. And I get in there and I'm looking around and there she is in the corner. God, she's good looking. She is good looking. She's blonde and blue eyed. And I said to my cousin, I'm asking her to dance. She'll not dance with you. I says, why? He says, this is Saturday. You've been drinking since Wednesday. So? As if that matters to us. I'd have been drinking from Tuesday if I had money. And I got up to this little blonde, and my God, as I got closer, she got better. And I says to her in my best Sean Connery voice, I says, excuse me, would you like to dance? She says, oh yeah. You know what I should have said? Excuse me, would you like to go to Al-Anon for the rest of your life? Because that's what's going to have to happen. You're going to Al-Anon, and that's what she had to do. Or I would have destroyed her, because that's what I do. And I went to AA and impressed her, and I didn't like it. But I came in when I was 22, insulted a doctor. There's some men in this room that I've met this weekend will understand this. I come from a divided society. They're either a Catholic or you're something else. But, and that's the way it was. I learned that from my people. I got that honest. I didn't realize I was wrong till I came here. I thought everybody did that. Where I came from, everybody did. So what happens is I insult the doctor and I have to go to AA because he's not Catholic. And I came in that night and I heard this guy talk. My God. He was a Scots guy. He was old. He was like 55. And I was listening to him. And for the first time in my life, I heard somebody talk about drink the way I drank. I heard somebody talk about the consequences and how they felt about those consequences the way I did. And for the first 25 minutes, I thought I was a clairvoyant. What I was doing, I was enacting the fundamental element of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is identification. I was identifying with a guy. I couldn't believe it. And then he got sober and stuff. He lost me. How many steps? I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. Well, you're doing it. Well, and I left. And I come back at 23. You know, I'm in and out, but I come back at 23 and I met this little Irish guy. And this little guy was to save my life. Sometimes I wish he had never bothered, you know? He was unfeeling, unsympathetic, and really, really sober. He worked with my brother. And he says to me, "Oh, Martin, how are you doing, son?" I said, "All right." He said, "You're Harry's brother, eh?" "Yeah, he's a nice guy, Harry." "You're a jerk." I says, "What did you say?" He said, "You're a jerk." "That's what your brother says." And he does what we don't do so much anymore. He reaches for a pen and a paper and he gives me his name and his address and his phone number. And he says these prophetic words: "The next time you get any trouble, give me a call." I was 28 days sober. I looked at him straight in the eyes and said, "Jimmy, I'm cured." And he looked at me straight in the eyes and he said, "Listen, fatso, if I hung you up in a smokehouse, you wouldn't be cured in 28 days. I said, "You are so..." I went and got drunk at him because that's what I do. You upset me, I only know to get drunk or angry. I don't know anything else. I came out of a house where my mother and father had taught me all the manners, the morals, the integrity, and the principles I would have needed to have a great life. Because the 7 other kids in the house, they got them and they all had great lives. And then me. My father used to say that, "Martin, look at the rest of them." And I'd put my arm around the wee guy and say, "Listen, Jimmy, 7 out of 8. If you were a baseball player, you'd be in the Hall of Fame, so it's okay." I got drunk, came back at 24. By the time I'm 24, I'm living intermittently on Skid Row. I didn't come here to do that. I came here to be a success. I came here to be a decent guy. I got a wife. I got a baby. See that baby of mine when I first met her? God, I loved her. You know why I loved her? Because she was mine. She's mine. And she loves me because she doesn't know what else to do. But by that time in my life, doors are starting to close. Sort of people are saying, "Martin, please." At 25, I come back and I'm done. My dry date is August the 1st, 1983. So, thank you, thank you. That's actually a holiday in Canada, and they have it just for me. And that little guy who'd gave me his phone number 2 years ago, I have what they call the endemic memory, which isn't good when you resent people because you have it forever, right? But I called that guy, and he came, and he done a 12-step call. He didn't come and give me a drive to the detox because that's a cab ride. And he didn't talk to me on the phone for 15 minutes because that's information. I believe a 12-step call is when someone intervenes in your life to such a degree, they change the course of it. And that's what that little Irish guy done. I didn't even ask him. He came and got me in a 1962 Park Lane convertible with red leather seats. Oh, it was beautiful. It's beautiful. June the 25th, that was. That August the 1st, that was. My drunk had started on June the 25th. He said, "Get in." And he said to me, "What happened?" And for the very first time in a long time, I'd been honest. I said, "I don't know." He says, "Well, try and tell me." I says, "Well, my granddad died. And because my dad had been in the Navy, I thought my granddad was my daddy. Because he put us to the box and he took us to the Celtic every single week, home and away. He taught us all sorts of stuff that was no good for us. You know, like entrepreneurial stuff. And he died. And my mother sent me what they had, £1,000. It was everything they had in the world. Everything. $2,384.20 Canadian. $9 American. I went to the bank to get the money, and I thought, I'll have one bottle of beer. June the 25th, 1983, one bottle of beer to think about it. I suffer from another condition that I never talk about here, because I don't think we should talk about any other conditions here. I'm here to talk about my alcoholism, but God, I'm complicated. I've got all sorts of stuff wrong with me. But medically, I have enlarged adrenals. And when I drink, blackout. If you ever came in a conversation halfway through out of a blackout, I was buying a house one time when I came out of a blackout. And that wasn't the question. The question was, where did I get the down payment? Because I never had it when I went into the blackout. But anyway, I wake up on July the 15th. That's 20 odd days. And I don't mean passing out somewhere in a corner. I'm operating to some degree because the people who are with me think I'm all right. And I don't know. I have no recollection of it. And the only time I'm ever going to have recollection of that when I get into a state of euphoric recall. But I have to be in euphoria to do it. And that means I would have to drink, and I can't do that. So I go home to my house, which is not the truth. My mother-in-law had bought a house across the road from her to look after her daughter and her granddaughter because I couldn't. And I used to say it was my house. The truth of it is it was my mother-in-law's other house. It's the truth. And I went in and it was empty. No furniture. No Cheryl. God, I love my wife. It's gone. But no Veronica. Veronica's 2.5, almost 3. I need to tell you about this, about my girl. My girl's bilingual. She can talk like me, she can talk like you. Really, still. And I look over at the mother-in-law's house and I thought, I don't know where I get the courage to go to the door. And my mother-in-law opens the door and she's got a face like Tony Soprano. She says to me, you have to call your mother, as if I know what I've done. I've just no stolen off my mum and dad. That's the least of it. You know the real important thing that I've done to my mum and dad? I've disrespected them for the last time. I've hurt them to a degree that they can take no more. Because we always find the level that people can take and then we go an inch over it. That's what we do. Or that's what I do for sure. And my mother-in-law picked the phone up, here. And it was Mama. And I could tell by the inflection in my mother's voice, the pain. Because she had lost her dad. And now she thinks she's lost her son. And she says to me, Martin, I don't know what we done wrong. I don't know where we went wrong. But don't you come here. Don't write here. Don't phone here. You've done something with your life. And she hung up. It's Mama. And I look at my Cheryl and God, she's pregnant again and she's something else. I said, Cheryl, she says, Martin, I've got plans, but you're knowing them. I can take no more. And I look at my Veronica. God, I love that kid. I said, can I take Veronica for candies? She says, sure you can take Veronica for candies, Martin. Sure you can. Because she knows I love Veronica. And I get Veronica by the hand, you know, my hands are supposed to be the ones that walk her up the aisle, and my hands are supposed to dress Barbie dolls, and my kid played 2 sports for the country and 4 for the province, and she's unbelievable. And I would have never had that opportunity because I've always got a drink in my hand, and I can't take her hand. And that day I'm taking her hand and I'm walking up that street and gosh, it's warm. And I look down at her and she says to me, Dad. I says, what? She says, I still love you. And I knew she was the only person in the whole world who did. Because everyone else with just cause had turned their back to save themselves. And I suffered the loneliness that really only people like us suffer from. I don't have the guts to kill myself, or I would have done it, and that's the truth. And because of my religion, I think I would be in purgatory an awful long time if I do that, so I'm not doing that. So what I do, I go and get drunk. And I'm back on Skid Row. And I wake up on August the 1st, and I'm done. And I know there's men on that Skid Row who have went further down than me. But I can go no further. I call that guy and he comes and gets me in the 62 Park Lane. He says, you got to go to the detox. I'm going to the detox. Why not? Take me down to the Palace for the Peculiar, which is the local nutward, because I know a girl down there who's going to help me. He says, oh, I've already talked to her. She's on the AA program. I didn't know that. That's over. You're going to the, I guess I can't go to the detox, and please don't get upset with this. Why not? I says, well, down on the Skid Row, the guys were all telling me the guys who were in the detox are all homosexuals. And I'm no gone. He says, they told you what? Oh yeah, no gone. Oh, you're gone. No, oh yeah, you're gone. And he goes into his pocket and, oh, he had a big, oh, get a rich sponsor. Don't get a poor one. They're not much good. Yeah, big pile of dough. He pulls off $10. He says, here, if you don't want to go to the detox, go get drunk and beat it. Because if you don't want what we have got, you can beat it right now, kid. Okay, I'll go. He took the $10 back. Because I'm no good with money. And he put me in a detox, and my oh God, I seen the guy open the door at the detox. He was ugly. The truth is, this little ugly guy had 7 kids with 6 different women. Come in. Lie there. Shh. Quiet. Don't say nothing. Be quiet. And after a while, he says, come with me. Up the stairs. And he turns round with lust in his eyes. And he says, take off your clothes. And me being a big tough guy says, I just want to get sober. He'd been listening to this for 2 years, and he said after, I was the stupidest guy he had ever met about it, because I was so... He says, take off your clothes, I'm going to wash them and get to your bed. And I went to bed. And I want to talk about a guy, this guy, Wilson, for a minute. I've been in that room in New York, which is no longer a hospital, but I've been in that room where he had the displacement of his everything in his life, and it had moved, whatever, and he woke up a different guy. I didn't have that. He had that for me. I woke up knowing that I could have that. I would just have to do the work. And so what happened, I came down in the morning and I said, it doesn't matter what that Irish guy tells me, I'll do it. Oh God, I wish I had never said that. Because you know when you set yourself a target and you think you're really, really like right on, and you realize later you're an idiot. So that little Irish guy came and says to me, okay, this is how it's going to go. None of this go to 90 means 90 days, because that's a brush off. What if it's 91? He says, you're going to go to meetings every day. And he took me, and he took me, and he took me, and he took me, and he took me. And then he sent me, and he sent me, and he met me there, and he met me there. And then eventually what happens, he says to me, Martin, you're going to have to turn yourself in, because I had warrants out for my arrest. I'm sure everybody did. Well, I know he did, because he's no good, him. So I turned myself in. And the judicial system takes its toll. And I don't know about America, but this is how it works in Canada. When you go in front of the judge, if he's got his glasses up here, he's been reading reports, and you got a chance of not going to jail. If his glasses are down here, you're off. I went in and he had no glasses on, and I thought, what? He says, I'm going to give you a year, but you're going to feed your family from now on. You're going to do it on a TAP, which is a temporary abstinence program. You're going to go to work. You're going to hand your wages over to your wife or your sponsor. And you're going to go to AA. I'm thinking, I should just do the year. So I'm thinking. I start going to AA. God, I love AA. I like the people. Well, most of the people. I like, most of all, that a guy like me can go. Because I'm welcome nowhere. Nobody wants me anywhere. You know, and while I was doing this, Cheryl had another baby, Elizabeth. It's no good. And I started going to this group called the Wayside Discussion Group, which in Hamel we call the Friday Night Fights. It's like a kind of rough group, you know, guys who are like, need some corners brushed off and their language cleaned up a little bit, because I can swear for 20 minutes and never use the same word twice. And they said, no more swearing, it's over. No more of it. We've had enough of that. I believe that Alcoholics Anonymous is a vehicle that guys like me can get sober. But I think, and I know this isn't too proper, if you're not really alcoholic, this won't work for you. This just won't work. You really need to go somewhere else. And I know that's not popular, but that's the truth in my experience. So what happens for me is I get involved with this little Irish guy and then these two Scots guys. And before you know it, I'm talking to four guys. I've never talked to four guys in over 2 years. I have never been involved in a conversation. I'm usually the subject of their conversation, but I'm involved. And then I come to my group one night, I'd been setting up and making the coffee and setting out the chairs and doing the business. I'm in service. Don't you know I'm a big shot in this group? And this guy says to me, you're going to be the secretary treasurer. Is that get a badge? Well, we can get you a badge, but this is how it works here. The secretary treasurer is the only guy in this group that's got a job. And if we don't make the rent out of the seventh tradition, you make it up. I used to write to my mother twice a week, phone her twice a week and write to her. And the letters were like this. Dear Mum, I am working in Venezuela this week and I'm doing a church here, or I'm working in Los Angeles, or and I'd let her know how I was doing. I made X amount of dollars and I gave it all to Cheryl. This week I write to her, Dear Mum, I am the secretary treasurer of the Wayside Discussion Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Hamilton, Ontario. God, it looked good. I want to tell you about that. I was at my mum's funeral and my auntie says to me, Martin, you know how we used to go to lunch, all the sisters and cousins, and we talk about our families, and they'd say, Bessie, how's your family doing? Margaret's got a big house in Toronto. Annette's driving a brand new Mercedes-Benz. Harry's got two brand new cars. How's Martin? He's in jail in Michigan this week. It's a new experience for him. So they stop talking about you until I write that letter, and then my mum comes in and says, shh. I am the secretary treasurer of the Wayside Discussion Group of Alcohol. That's my Martin. He's high up in the AA. She said, I think he's going to be the president. That was two of us. Hey. want to get involved in recovery for a little minute. I did get involved in service, but service isn't 12-step work. Service is what makes 12 works possible. See what these guys done all weekend, these volunteers, except for our two hosts who done nothing, but everybody else who worked really hard. That's service work that makes stuff possible. So if you're in the H&I committee, or you're in the corrections committee, you're making 12-step work possible when them guys come out or when them guys are in there. And you know, one of the things about corrections that kind of bugs me is when we talk about those guys as inmates, they're not inmates. They're inside members. It don't matter where you are, you're still a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had been thinking if I had done the year, I could have been the inside GSR. I get involved in things. I got a brother, Harry. God, I love Harry. I'm going to tell you this story, and this is... he's an emotional guy, you know, he's like a weepy willow, yeah, oh, right, and I'm not, right. And he says to me, Martin, I might need a kidney. Oh, Harry, we better go and see about that. So I go and get checked out. And because I'm pristine, I've never done any drugs, I've not drank for a long time, my kidneys are 49 and a half, 50 and a half, which is almost pristine. And the doctor says, this guy's a genetic match for you, Harry, you could get one of his kidneys. And Harry was so happy. And we're driving in the car away, and he's crying. And he says to me, would you give me a kidney? I says, yeah, for 50 grand, I'd give you a kidney. And if I need it, I want it back. I would have given him it like that. The gift we get is a gift of sobriety. It's not the gift of not drinking. That's the truth for me. Not drinking don't really mean much. What do you do with this? I'm going to tell you three stories, and then would that be time for me to sit down? I'm going to tell you three stories. And the first story is, I come from this divided religious society. And when I'm a kid, hundreds of people are getting murdered for it every year. The two soccer teams that I go to see, every time they play, somebody gets murdered after one of those games. Every single time. Right, Peter? I'm working in Windsor, Ontario. And my boss is a Norwegian. He's a Viking. He's 6 foot two and he's got long... He looks like Fabio. I hate this guy. He was 25, he inherited $30 million and he drives a Porsche. What a... He walks in the mall and all the women are like that. Oh my, I want to walk with him, you know? So he says to me, Martin, this is a great job you're doing here. Would you do the same job in Windsor, in Detroit? I said, sure. I'll pay you American money. Oh yeah. I'm Scottish as all hell, eh? Oh yeah. And we get over there. And please try and keep an open mind on this or not. But when we get over there, we're driving over there. He says, Martin, by the way, the collective agreement in this plant says that one of the guys who's a regular in here can labor to you so he can have his holidays at different time than the shutdown. So you're going to get a senior guy. And so this little guy walks out and he's colored. And I said to him, I'm not working with him. He says, why not? I says, he's black. He says, okay, you're fired. Because that's how normal people deal with racism. You're fired. I says, okay, I'll do it this time, but I'm never doing it again. My boss says, well, sure, but... 8 o'clock in the morning. At 20 after eight, I know this little colored guy's in AA. He's no told me he's in AA. I can smell it off him. He's in AA, he's so sober, it's unbelievable. Take it easy. Live and let live. At 10 o'clock in the morning, what the tradesman usually does is gives the laborer a couple of bucks and say, hey, go get his coffees. 10 o'clock in the morning, I say to him, Gus, could I go and get me you a coffee? He says, sure. How long are you sober? I says, 2.5 years. He says, I don't usually let guys that new get my coffee, but I'll make an exception this time. I want to tell you how my God works. I don't have a subtle God. The God of suggestion is no good to a guy like me. I'm a practical type of a man, I'm a tradesman, so I really need example. At 8 o'clock in the morning, I'm a grand wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. And at 10 o'clock in the morning, I'm the coffee boy. And he says, if you get it wrong, you're going back. Okay, Gus. I fell in love with that little guy. In love. I don't say that easy because I'm not a guy who's given to that kind of talk. I would have done anything for him. And he says to me on a Friday, Martin, would you come to my meeting and speak on Sunday? Sure, Gus. I'll come and get you. And he came from Detroit to Windsor and back, and then he drove me back and went back home, and I let him. What I should have done is met him halfway. And he takes me over to this place in Detroit, and I've seen some people from Detroit here, and please, this is no indictment of Detroit, this is just where we were. I had never seen anything like this in my life. I said, Gus, there's no grass. He says, we don't eat grass. And then we turned the corner and there was this little church, Calvary Baptist Church. And it had grass. I said, Gus, how come this has got grass and nowhere else has got grass? He says, oh, he says, the minister here, Martin, he found Jesus when he was in Attica State Penitentiary in New York doing life for murder and became a minister and came back home to minister here. And he told the kids in the neighborhood, you touch the church, I'll kill the whole lot of yous. So the church, I understand that. And we get into the room, and I used to say, there was 500 people. There might have been 40, maybe. Maybe. I get in, and I said, Gus, I can't speak here. And Gus knows already. He's been winding me up all week. He says, why? I say, because they're all black. See, when old guys in AA get angry, it's at the eyebrows. Young guys get angry at the jaw. They're going to be, the old guys, they're just going to give you God. And the little guy's finger comes up and he says, you listen to me, honky. My eyes nearly fell out of my head. He said, they kids don't want you to talk about being white. They don't want to be white, and they sure as hell know how to be black. You get up there and you give them the only thing you got to give. And you know the only thing you have to give from this podium is your experience, strength, and hope. Don't lecture me from here. Don't tell me how I need to do stuff from here. I read the book. I know how the book goes. You know, when people get up here and lecture me, they always make me feel less because I'm not doing it perfectly. But I know enough of them to know that they're not doing it either. They're just lecturing. That's how this works. I do this as best as I can. Not as best as you can. Not as, well, better than you, but not as best as... You know. It works for me. And I got up to that podium that morning, and I'm going to tell you, it isn't lost on me this morning where I am, that I'm in Akron, Ohio. I'm in the crucible of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is where our program was forged. This is where our program was made for us. Us. And so, I look out that room and I realize I'm the only person of color in the room. And not one of those good folks have said a word. And then I realize God loves me because I know he loves them. And if he loves them, then he's going to love me. And that's the secret to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I want to tell you my story about the steps. I got the steps down here. That's how I met that little Harmon guy who's no good either. I'll tell you what happened. My sponsor says to me, you have to do the steps. I don't want to do the steps. Well, you're doing them. And it wasn't like a negotiation with Jimmy. It was just, he went on until I gave in. He said, but you're not doing them with me. You're too smart for me. Oh, I says, I know. He says, I'm going to take you down to Akron and meet an Irish, a Scottish guy called John Leach. Oh, what a guy, eh? Yeah, oh, yeah. Mister, it's in the book.
In the book. Shut up, it's in the book.
Big John. I love John. I go for an interview with John. He says to Jimmy, oh, my God. That boy's giving me a sore head. He says, I couldn't do the steps with him. He says, Jimmy, he uses words I don't know what they mean. Jimmy says, I'm not sure if he does either. And I think, probably going to have to do the steps myself. And a little guy walks out, eh? And he says, you ain't too smart for me, kid. This is the deal. You'll come down here for the next 14 weeks. We'll do a step a week. And if you miss 1 week, don't bother coming back. You imagine telling a new guy that today? He'd tell his counselor on you. You get a letter from the psychiatrist. How dare you? You're affecting this guy's self-esteem. I got the fifth step done. I had done things I thought I would never tell anybody. And the truth is, I had met that little guy from Westlake, Ohio, through Al Bailey and those guys and John. I'd maybe met him for 5 or 6 hours, and already I'm telling him things I have sworn I've never told anybody. And I up it the whole lot. He said, good job. Tomorrow morning, you're going to speak at the Highway Express meeting. Is that what it's called? As a 10-minute speaker. Oh, well, okay. I'll come to your hotel and get you. Oh, well, that's not so okay. Why? Because I'm not in a hotel. I don't have any money for a hotel. I'm living in the car. Cheryl makes me up a cooler of sandwiches. I drive to Westlake, Ohio. I do the steps and then I drive back home. I just got money for gas. And this little guy says, wait a minute. You've been in that car for 6 weeks. Yeah. You're going to be okay. Because you know what it says in our literature? If you want what we have, because we don't want what you have, I'll tell you that. If you want what we have and you're ready to go any length, then you're ready to take certain steps, and if you're not, beat it. And on a Monday, I had to go and do the step with Jimmy, which was a revelation to him too. And I got through the steps. And do you know the difference between doing the steps and not doing the steps? You see, it says in the steps, here are the steps we took. It doesn't say, here are the steps we lectured about. Here are the steps we jammed down somebody's throat. It says, here are the steps we took. And the only way to understand how somebody's took the steps is by example. How does that guy live his life? How does that girl live her life? When I came to AA, I thought morals were the things you painted on the side of a building. It was unbelievable. Now all of a sudden I'm a moral guy, I'm living a good life. I'm no perfect. I'm still no perfect. But gosh, I'm a better guy than I've ever been at any time in my life. And I get the steps done. And I want to tell you how it works in my life. I love Mama. God, I loved Mama. And I used to call her twice a week, Wednesdays and Saturdays, for the Celtic results, Peter. Hello. And on June the 1st, 1994, Mama was what the good book says, 3 score plus 10. And I called her, and I said, oh, hi, Ma. She says, oh, hello, son, nice to hear. How you doing? Oh, fine. I says, happy birthday, Mum. She says, you know, Martin, those flowers came this morning that you sent. I've never had flowers like that before. I said, that's okay, Ma. I'm just happy they're better than Harry's. That's all I care about, right? She says, but I put them roses out to cut them, to put them in a vase. Oh, yeah. And there was only 11 of them. I said, Ma, take the phone over to the mirror. And my wee Ma takes the phone over to the mirror. And I said to her, Ma, there's the 12th rose. I love you. That's when you know the steps are working in your life. When you can tell the people you love that you love them and you mean it, and by action you back it up. That's when it starts to work. She says, oh, and I love you and you're a good boy. It's the last word I ever said to Mama. She died suddenly and tragically 3 days later. But you know, if you're going to end a fairy tale, that would be the way to do it with your wee Ma. And when I went home, I put my 1 year medallion in where, and the 12th rose. I love you, Ma. And I thought it was over. It was just the start of the relationship with my mother, because the God I have lets you carry spiritual relationships with people who are no longer here. You know, I'll tell you this. When I'm thinking about things and that little Irish guy turns up, I know I'm in trouble. You won. How you doing, Marv? Not too good, eh? Son of a... So this is what happens for me. And I want to tell you the last story about Yvonne. I don't sponsor women because I don't understand women. I don't. Just... They're enigmas shrouded in mystery who talk in riddles. And the only language that they understand is credit card, right? This big girl comes in to AA in Hamel, and my gosh, she's a big girl, 5'9", 240 pounds. She's got a chip on her shoulder and a motorcycle patch on her back. And not one of those ones that say, we love you, not one of those ones. And I had to eventually approach her and say, Yvonne, you keep doing what you're doing, you'll die. And she looked at me straight in the eye and said words I can't repeat anywhere, never mind here. And a couple of months later, she comes up to me and she says to me, Martin, would you sponsor me? I said, let me think about it, Yvonne. Which is the gutless way out of saying no. And I went and asked 6 women in Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's a little girl in Hamel called Susie who's a doll. I said, Susie, would you sponsor her? She says, sponsor her? Every time I see her, I faint. She says, she's terrifying. I says, I know. So I went to my wife, I says, do you think if we helped this girl, you could do the women's stuff for her? Because I don't know anything about that stuff, you know? I really don't. And then the 4th step and the 5th step, I don't want to do a women's sex conduct. I don't think it's appropriate for a man to do a women's sex conduct, because I don't understand the kind of abuse these girls go through. I really don't. So my wife done that with her, Miss Al-Anon. 2 years it took us to civilize her. The leather jacket comes off, the chaps come off, the hair gets cut, she wears a blouse, slacks. She becomes the GSR of the group. And then one night the door goes, and I open the door, and she's got a face like a can of bums. I says, what's wrong? I was at the GSR meeting tonight. I said, oh yeah. And the treasurer was stealing the money. I says, well, did he need groceries? Because if somebody in AA is taking something, find out why they're taking it first before you throw a rock. Don't just judge somebody because you think you're better and somebody showed you weakness. See if you can help them first. Oh, she says, I never asked. I just choked him. I says, you did what? Well, she says, I choked him. I said, no. She says, it took 5 men. One of the men was Brother Terence from the mission. Oh, by the way, do you know anywhere we can have the GSR meetings? Because Terence says we've not to come back. Yvonne, you can't act like that. And she says to me after, she realized at that time I was the only friend she had in the whole world. 2 years. And she starts to cry. I thought this girl would never cry. I wish she would stop now, but that was... She says, Martin, I just don't have it all together. I'm going to tell you something. I've met some giants in AA. And that guy over there is one of them. And I'm sure if I got to know some of the rest of yous, well, some of yous, you'd be giants too. But we're a society of broken people. Don't ever think that anybody has got it all together. My buddy Yvonne says to me, Martin, I just don't have it all together. Yvonne, nobody's got it all together. But you know what I think the answer in Alcoholics Anonymous is? The real answer is why the fellowship is so important. Because if you've got the steps and not the fellowship, you're wasting your time. You've got to have it all. And I want it all. Do you know why I think it's important? Because nobody's got it all together. But all together, we've got it. Thanks for having me.
Well, Martin, thank you very much. I want to thank everyone for coming this weekend. It's been a marvelous weekend. Martin, you did a great job to end the weekend and wanting us to come back next year for more. I hope you all have a safe trip home and that you do come back next year and you bring a friend with you. And the committee would like to present Martin with a gift of our appreciation. Copy of the original version of How It Works. We could all just thank Martin and we could all just have a safe trip home. Again, I just want to thank everyone for coming and thank all the volunteers and the committee members for letting me serve on this committee for the last 5 years. Thank you. Let's end this with the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father,
who art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name.
Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever.
Thanks, Kent.
That was good stuff.